All right, so we're going to try to finish out here. We have our last six chapters or so of 1 Samuel, so we'll finish that up here. And so after all these tests that we just talked about, we actually have one more test in chapter 26 that's going to sound pretty familiar. So we have in chapter 26, once again, David's kind of moved to another part of the wilderness, and Saul hears about it. And so much for his vow of like, oh, I'll leave you alone. We see Saul pursuing him once again, trying to find him, to kill him, all that. But you have another event where Saul and his army that he brought with him, they're all sleeping. And David goes along with Abishai, kind of brings him along. And they enter, sneak into the camp by night. And this is where you have kind of this deja vu moment. Okay, you have this deja vu moment where this test you see. They see Saul laying there. He's dead asleep. Everyone's all asleep. And Abishai tells David, again, similar to what has been told in the cave, of like, hey, the Lord's given him into your hand. And but this time he says, like, I'll do it. Like, let me pin him to the ground, right? Is kind of what he says. And but how does David respond, right? Verse 9, it says, but David said to Abishai, do not destroy him, for who can put out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? And in verse 10, and David said, as the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him, or his day will come to die, or he will go down into battle and perish. Okay, and so what do you see here, right? Like he's saying like Saul's fate is ultimately up to the Lord. It's in his hands, not in my hands. And so is this different than how David responded before? Yeah, it is. Okay, remember last time he kind of initially kind of listened to his men and cut the corner of the robe, all that, right? Instead of trusting the Lord. But now we see that, as you mentioned, these tests were meant to refine David. They're meant to grow him. And we see that he is growing, okay? He is being refined. And so it is working, okay? He's learning. He needs to not just take matters into his own hands. He needs to trust the Lord, to wait on his timing, okay? So he's starting to learn some of these things. So that's why you kind of have this similar deja vu kind of test, okay? It's like, well, I thought we already did this test, and yeah, he kind of did, but it's to show the growth, okay? To show the refinement. And so they don't strike Saul down, they don't strike him down, but instead, like, they take Saul's spear and his water jug that are right by him, and they go kind of a good distance away and call back to him and kind of like, hey, I took your stuff, like, could have killed you again, but didn't. And again, Saul once again says he's sorry, which, I don't know, David's probably like tired of hearing that, right? Because he doesn't probably believe it. But again, we see this kind of, he doesn't pursue David further. But this doesn't seem to last very long, because even in the next chapter, we see David is thinking, if I remain in the land, I'm going to perish, right? Like, and all that. And so in chapter 27, where does David flee? Yeah, he goes back to the Philistines, right? So let's try this again. All right, so he goes to the Philistines, which is, again, interesting, right? We talked about, like, he's being refined, he's growing, and he still has room to grow. Because what is interesting by this? Because he says in the beginning of chapter 27, if I remain in the land, I'm going to perish. I'm not going to survive. Saul's going to kill me one day. But is that actually true? No. What did God promise him? You're going to be king. And what have we seen all along so far? God delivering him, right? Even to the point where it's like, we talked about, like, even they're on like the other side of the hill and God orchestrates something to draw us all away. Like, and so God has been faithful to deliver David. Like, he's been doing it, okay? And sometimes even through miraculous means. But again, you kind of have David still taking things into his own hands, okay? Where even though he's grown some, as we just saw, he still needs to be refined. He's still growing, okay? He's still not, like, perfect or anything. And so, he doesn't remain in the land. He heads to the land of the Philistines. And again, you could think, well, why isn't this the best decision? We just tried this before, right? He just tried this. And some time has passed, okay? So it's not, like, 2 days or something. It's been time. But we've seen he tried this before. It didn't go well. But this time it actually does, okay? This time it actually does go well. The Philistines take him in, and he actually lives with the king of Gath. So he's living in Goliath's hometown and all that. And that actually does lead to Saul not pursuing him anymore. So Saul doesn't want to go into the land of the Philistines. He doesn't want to create an issue here. But the question is, like, why does it work this time? Why do the Philistines accept David at this point, do you guys think? Yeah, yeah. So it's probably that, right? Because they've probably heard that David's been on the run from Saul and how Saul, like, he's an enemy of Saul. And it seems to be almost kind of that classic example of, like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Where it's like, well, you're the enemy of Saul. So, like, yeah, we could be buddies. That's cool. Right? And so they've understood this. They've seen, and if they view David like Saul views David as, like, this threat to the throne and everything, that's probably why they bring him in. And they probably even have grander ideas, because if they understand, like, hey, you're kind of a threat to the throne, or you might end up being the king one day, is their hope is, hey, if we get David as kind of like our ally, all this, and he gets to the throne, now we kind of have almost like a puppet king, right? Like, we kind of control Israel with, like, we don't have to actually battle them or anything, but we control them if we have our guy on the throne, essentially. And so there's a lot of benefits for them to kind of take David in at this point. So that seems to be kind of this idea. And so that's why they treat David differently here. And this is kind of confirmed because, like, as you, if you read through the account, you see that while David's there, he ends up in Ziklag. That's where they kind of end up living, kind of a little more isolated from the rest of the Philistines. And David and his men, they do raids throughout the land. And while the king of Gath, like, he thinks he's raiding, like, Israelites, and he's getting all the spoils, because that's kind of what he tells him. In reality, it says, like, he's making raids on the Geshurites, the Gerzites, the Amalekites. So the people that the conquest was supposed to deal with, he's, like, kind of continuing the conquest in a sense. And he would get the spoils, bring them back to the king of Gath, and, like, yeah, we just raided some people from Judah or something, right? And again, kind of lying and all that. But Achish believes him, the king of Gath, he believes him, and views David very highly. He considers him a loyal servant. He's like, hey, you're going to be my servant forever, kind of a thing. And so we see that all confirmed, okay? And again, this seems to go all fine for David until you have chapter 28. You see, David gets into a little bit of a predicament here. Because what ends up happening at the beginning of chapter 28, like in verse 1, what starts to happen? Yeah, the Philistines decide, hey, we're going to wage war against Israel. And then you have Achish kind of come up to David and say, hey, we're going to wage war. You are coming with me. Like, you're my guy. And so what's the predicament? David is now stuck because, like, I'm this, like, living with these guys, doing all this. They think I'm, like, hurting Israel, all that. And now I'm have to go to battle against Israel. That's not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to fight my people, right? And so he's kind of in this now predicament of what is he going to do? What is he going to do? And so we'll get to what he's going to do in a moment. But we have a little kind of break here where it turns back to kind of Saul, okay? So we saw David's in the predicament. We'll come back to him. But we kind of change scenes here to look at Israel's side more so as they prepare for this battle, this war. And we see this interaction of Saul, okay? In some of his actions kind of leading up here. And so verses 3 and 4 of chapter 28, they kind of set the scene for us here. They give us a little setting of what's happening. Verse 3 reminds us that Samuel has died. And so this might be why the Philistines are kind of like, hey, let's mount an attack. That guy's dead, okay? They're one of their main guys. But we also see mentioned in verse 3 is that Saul has put all the mediums and necromancers out of the land. And we kind of, well, that's a strange, like, reference, but we'll see that that comes up. And the Old Testament law is very clear, actually, on the issue of kind of mediums and necromancers. You see, like, in Deuteronomy 18, it states that there should be no mediums among the people, so they shouldn't even exist. So the fact that Saul was banishing them from the land, getting rid of them, was a good thing that he was doing, okay? Leviticus 20 goes even further to state that mediums should be put to death. So that's something. Leviticus 19 commands the people not to turn to mediums. So, hey, don't go pursuing them. And Leviticus 20 takes that even further to say, whoever does turn to a medium and pursues them, the Lord will be against them and will cut them off from among the people. Okay, so we see the issue of kind of mediums is very clear. It's very serious here. So at least Saul has this bright spot of kind of putting them out of the land. Okay. And then verse 4 gives us the last bit of setting where it states that the Philistines have assembled and encamped at Shunem, and Saul and Israel gathered and encamped at Gilboa. Okay, and we have included a map for one so you don't have to deal with my drawings. I have a little map, which I don't know if it's kind of small. I'm going to wheel it closer. Without tipping over the TV. Okay, let's see. Is this mouse like? Okay, yeah, you can see my mouse. Okay, so on the left there, you have kind of like the bigger picture of Israel in general. So you have kind of this area. It's like the Jezreel Valley up in the northern part. And so on the right is kind of the zoomed in view. So you have Shunem. That's where the Philistines are encamped. And kind of Jezreel and Mount Gilboa is right kind of down here. So the Israelites are encamped here. So that's kind of the scene being set and all that. Okay? All right. But then the rest of the chapter kind of gives this event of, as Saul prepares for this battle, some of the actions he does. So when Saul sees the Philistine army, he is greatly afraid, he's trembling, and he actually tries to inquire of the Lord, but what happens? The Lord doesn't answer, right? The Lord doesn't answer him, and by all the various means that the Lord has used to communicate to his people, Saul gets nothing, okay? He gets nothing. And as a result, Saul is desperate. And what does he ask the servants to do? Yeah, get him a witch. Find a medium for me. Like, hey, is there a medium? It's kind of like, well, didn't you like banish them all from the land? Like, but he's now asking for one. And they tell him, hey, there's actually a medium at Endor. And so we see Saul disguises himself and he goes with a couple of his men to this medium at Endor. And real quick, again, come back to this geography here. Where is Endor is the question. I don't know if you can see on here. It's right up here. Okay, that's where Endor is. You can see that. And so, if Israel is encamped in Jezreel, kind of Gilboa, what do you have to go through to get to Endor? Mountains, but what else? Yeah, the Philistines, the camp of the Philistines, okay? So, essentially, right, Saul is so desperate to seek this medium, he's in the process sin, that he's going to cross enemy lines to and put his life in danger just to do this. Okay? So very risky here of what he's doing. But he makes it there. He does make it. And he instructs the woman, this medium, to bring up Samuel, the spirit of Samuel. And now there's various explanations or speculations people make of like what exactly is going on here. But what we see is the woman sees Samuel, like his spirit, and she cries out with a loud voice out of fear, it says, and this would indicate that something is happening here that she's not used to or was not expecting. And so maybe it's she was never actually able to do this and now it's actually happening and it's freaking her out, like, uh-oh, what is happening? Like, I normally just make up something and like, I don't know. But we see this happen, so the Lord allows Samuel's spirit to actually come in this unique moment. But whatever the case is happening, the Lord allows this to occur in order to deliver kind of this final message to Saul. And so Samuel questions Saul, like, why did you disturb me? Saul explains, well, the Lord wasn't answering me, and so I was desperate, and I wanted to summon you to figure out, like, what am I supposed to do? Tell me what I'm supposed to do. And then I love Samuel's response. He's just like, well, if the Lord didn't is ignoring you, why would you bother me? Right? Like, essentially, right? Like, if the Lord's kind of like rejected you, why are you bothering me here? And he says, like, obviously that means the Lord has become your enemy. And he essentially shows, like, that's exactly what I had declared to you, right? That, like, the Lord is torn this kingdom from you and has given it to David. That's the reality. And so as a result, he declares, like, the Lord will give Saul and the Israelite army into the hands of the Philistines the next day. Okay, that's what he tells Saul. And so Saul was obviously then filled with even more fear. That was probably not what he was hoping to hear for all this. And eventually he kind of makes his way back to Israelite camp, knowing his fate. And all of what Samuel told Saul makes sense, not only because of what Samuel had declared before, that, yeah, like, your reign's not going to continue, God has rejected you, but it also, because of those Old Testament laws we just read concerning, like, the mediums and stuff, also makes sense, because remember, Leviticus 20 stated, those who turn to a medium, the Lord will be against you, right? The Lord will be against you and will cut you off from among the people. And so even Saul doing this, like, further sealed his fate, okay? And so you see the Lord's word is coming to pass on multiple levels here and everything coming, okay? All right, so not looking good for Saul. But then we cut back. What about David? So what's going on with him? He's in his own predicament. Chapter 29, we see the Philistines reject David. So we now see here that it's interesting that chapter 29 starts with mentioning the Philistines having gathered at Aphek, which we just saw them camped at Shunem. So if we go back to our map here, let's see, it's a little smaller on the screen. So up here is kind of the Jezreel Valley where we said like Shunem and all that is. Aphek is down in this area, okay? That's kind of Aphek, that's in the coast. Can you guys see that? Or anything else? Okay. So you're kind of like, well, why does he mention this? And so there's a couple explanations. One could be this chapter is referring to a prior event of kind of they were gathered at Aphek, then they eventually made their way to Shunem. So it's kind of describing something essentially that happens between verse 2 and verse 4 of chapter 28, which is a possibility. Or it could be there was Philistines already at Shunem, and this is like more troops are coming. Okay, so they're gathering at Aphek to then go up. But I do think the mentioning of gathering at Aphek was intentional of the author of 1 Samuel here, because it creates kind of an ominous feeling in light of what Samuel just declared to Saul, that essentially, hey, like, you're coming to an end here. And then you have this mentioning of the Philistines gathering in Aphek, and you could think, well, why does this create kind of an ominous feeling? Well, back in 1 Samuel 4, the same thing happens, where you have the Philistines gathering at Aphek for battle in 1 Samuel 4. And that was the battle that was going to seal the fate of Eli and his sons. Because you remember, Samuel declared to Eli, hey, the Lord is about to bring judgment on you and your sons. This priesthood is bad. He's going to bring judgment on them. And then you have this battle where they're gathering at Aphek, and that's what ends up happening. And so now you have the same event where Saul is declared, hey, the Lord is bringing judgment on you and your sons, like your kingdom right here, it's coming to an end. And then you have the Philistines gathering in Aphek. It's kind of this, you get this feel of, okay, this is bad, right? This is not looking good and all that. So that seems to be why there's this connection here, why he's bringing up Aphek again, okay, to make this connection. But back to our account. So as the Philistines kind of gather at Aphek, you have the commanders looking at all the people, and then all of a sudden they see David and his tribe of kind of Hebrews, and they're, what are these Hebrews doing here? Okay, like, they're not part of our army. And you have the king of Gath kind of stands up for David, like, hey, no, he's my trusted servant, he's good, he's fine. But do the Philistine commanders go along with this? No. They're like, no, we don't trust this. We don't think, like, how do we know that once in the heat of battle that they're not going to turn on us and become our enemy as well? And so they don't allow David to come, and eventually the king Gath also agrees, and so they send David back. And so you see here the Lord's hand, again, God's sovereignty in delivering David from this difficult predicament. Okay, where again you saw David kind of taking things in his own hands, fleeing to the Philistines, ends up in a bad situation, but God is faithful to deliver him out of it. Okay, so he's gracious to him to deliver him out of it. And so David returns to the land of the Philistines, returns to their home in Ziklag, while the rest of the Philistines continue up to the Jezreel Valley for that battle. But do you remember what David finds when he gets home to Ziklag? Yeah, it's all like burned down and everything was gone. And so you have, while they were gone, the Amalekites took advantage of that situation. They came in, took all their wives and children, and take all their goods, burned down the city, all that. And so, obviously, they're upset. So David, again, inquires of the Lord, like, should I go after him? He says, yes, go after him. And so that's what David does. Okay, he goes after the Amalekites, has victory over them. And real quick, remember where we saw the Amalekites before? Who was supposed to deal with the Amalekites? Yeah, Saul was, right? Remember, he was supposed to deal with them, but he didn't. He spared like the king and obviously more people. He didn't follow through with what the Lord had commanded. And so we see the consequences of that kind of coming up here, okay? And so David is kind of continuing to accomplish the Lord's promise to bring judgment on the Amalekites, kind of picking up where Saul didn't complete that. And so they destroy a lot of the Amalekites. Some still escape, so they're still around, which again, we mentioned before, that's going to set up like the book of Esther with Haman and all that. But for now, we see they destroy the Amalekites, they get all their stuff back, get all their wives and kids back. But we have to point out one last thing from this chapter, in chapter 30 here, that's significant, again, for this talking about David as king in a moment. Notice verse 20, or like before we get to that, if you remember, as they come back, some of the guys had stayed behind with the baggage because they were like exhausted, and so only some of them went with David to destroy the Amalekites. And so when they come back, the people who fought the battle were kind of like, well, we don't want to give any spoil to these guys. They didn't help us. So they could have their wives and kids back, but like, they don't get anything. But then notice verse 25, like David declared, like he states like, no, like it should be split equal, essentially, like whether they stay with the baggage or went to war, it'll be, they have the similar share. In verse 25, it says, and he made it a statute and a rule for Israel from that day forward to this day. And so you have here David's words essentially becoming law. Okay, David's words becoming law. And who has the power to have their word become law? A king. Okay, so again, you see David being pictured as a king. He's not quite the king yet, but he's being pictured as one. And it's setting up for him to take the throne. He is this right king. He is trending towards that way. But you still have to deal with Saul, the kind of usurper of the throne. You have to deal with him. And that's where we see chapter 31 wrap up here with Saul's fate, where the scene now turns back to the battle between the Israelites and the Philistines. And we find the Philistines overtaking the Israelites just as the Lord had promised, just as he said would happen. And in the midst of the battle, we see Saul's three sons are killed, and then Saul himself is wounded. And instead of falling into the hands of the Philistines, he falls on his sword and dies. Okay. And we see like the Philistines cut off his head, paraded around the land of the Philistines, but they also hang his body and the body of his sons on the walls of Bethshan of that city, probably just publicly shaming and them and showing their victory. But then you have some of the men of Jabesh-Gilead come and recover the bodies, give them a proper burial. And if you remember the people of Jabesh-Gilead, they've come up a couple of times. They were the relatives of Saul, okay? And they were also the ones that, like, Saul's, one of Saul's first acts as king. Remember, like, he delivered them from the Ammonites. And so it makes sense that they would attempt such a risky recovery, okay? And this is how the book of 1 Samuel ends. Saul is now dead. The Philistines have just won a decisive battle. Israel is wide open for further attack. And it all looks bad. It all looks bad. But we have to remember, God has been preparing and refining his king to take the throne, the right king. And he is now ready. He's been refined. He is now ready to step into that role. And that's what we'll see when we get together again for 2 Samuel. Okay? And so David, the right king, will finally take the throne. And so 1 Samuel leaves off on a kind of a to be continued, right, kind of thing. So it doesn't look good, but God's plan is still moving forward, and we'll see him kind of accomplish all that he had planned. Okay? So that wraps us up for our Old Testament survey 2. All right.